are listening to a podcast of The View, brought to you by the Church of the Larger Fellowship. To subscribe to this podcast, visit questformeaning.org or search for Church of the Larger Fellowship in the iTunes Store.
Hi, this is Meg Riley in Minneapolis, Minnesota. You've joined us for another episode of The View. Like my co-host to introduce himself here today.
Good morning, everyone. This is Michael Tino joining you from Peekskill, New York.
And our tech personnel, Jessica, want to say hello?
This is Jessica Star Rockers from the early morning Seattle, Washington area. You can see out my window. It's not even hardly light out yet.
And speaking of early morning in the Northwest, Aisha Hauser is not there this morning. She's in Boston in a meeting and won't be here. So we're really excited today to have a couple of guests to talk to us about what is going on in St. Louis. Before we get to that, as Michael said, it's starting to be a tradition that we just acknowledge genuinely horrible things that have happened in the preceding week. With everyone, we are angry, dismayed, grieving about people in St. Louis. I meant to say Las Vegas. And I don't know about y'all, but I now know three people who knew people who were there. It's always, you know, these things are always rippling into a whole community. So real grief and knowledge that the people in Las Vegas, who our congregation there and the other people who live there, are going to be dealing with this long after the news has stopped covering it, not to mention all of the families who are now with great shock and grief and trying to figure out what happened there. I also want to name the atrocity of our elected representative who went to Puerto Rico and was completely insulting and horrific to the people there, and to lift up the resistance and the people who are naming the truth of what's going on there, and all of the people who are working so hard for healing and for well-being of people who are without essentials like water and medicine. And to say with so many other voices how embarrassed and angry I was that somebody could allegedly represent me. Atrocious way that 45 did in Puerto Rico. Michael, anything you want to say in general?
No, I don't know what there is to say. As has become the norm, my heart is broken in a million pieces all over the world. And, you know, I spoke to someone this week who just found out that her mother is still alive in Puerto Rico. And, you know, that's the reality that people are dealing with, because 90% of the folks there don't have power, and 60% of the folks there don't have clean water, and hospitals have run out of fuel for their backup generators. I fear that while our attention has moved on, the worst of that story is yet to come. And we have to keep paying attention.
Absolutely. I read a piece that a doctor wrote about all the unnecessary deaths that are happening in the hospitals and other places there. Just atrocious. Yeah, it is. I mean, two staff members of CLF have family in Puerto Rico, and you know, it's very close. Following with people that you love to find out if the people that they love are alive. It's a time, I think, when we feel the interconnections, the global interconnections, so tightly with all of the ways that we're related to all of this. On a positive side, I want to say that one of the things I've been doing in my resilience training is going to Minnesota Lynx games and watching those women. They are amazing. And we won the championship last night. So, and I was there and it was really great. And there's something about watching them. They're such a team. Like, I love them because they're all so good and they don't have one star who everybody focuses on. It's like watching collective power, you know, and it's almost all Black women, and, you know, like they get knocked down. And last night it was a very physical game. I was joking with my friend. Sometimes it felt like football. I mean, people were tackling each other. There was a lot of energy in that room. And it was just so great to see them through the whole year, win and lose, just being a team. And it's such a role model to me of what we need to be doing, not looking, can we make the glorious shot, but figuring out who's best positioned and getting them what they need to do what they need to do. So shout out to the Minnesota Lynx. And I have never gone to any sports events in my life. So I'm like this born again sports fan. I've never like my heart beats fast when I see their pictures, like I'm in love with all of them.
You can Google my love for women's basketball and find things that I've written up on it. So, you know, they might not have one star that always gets the glorious shot. And part of that is because all of them are so good that they can, you know, they can all take that shot when they need to. So yay for your Lynx.
Yeah, the Lynx are great. And the Sparks were great too. I mean, it was really exciting to me to learn that Magic Johnson had, you know, become part owner of the Sparks because he liked to watch his sister play basketball. That's a great role model. You know, like I just feel like to have a room full of people of all genders and races and ages cheering for Black women just worked for me. It was a little disconcerting at the end when they presented the trophy and said, it was to the owners. Like that was a part of sports I hadn't quite wrapped my head around. And two white people came out. I was like, I was like, I didn't see you out there doing that work. But anyway, it was great. So anyway, we have to right now, we have to find joy. It's just, we've got to do that as part of staying alert and alive. So, well, let's talk about St. Louis. Speaking of resilience, we're seeing a lot of resilient resistance there. We have two guests who have been engaged. Kimberly Hampton, who is a fourth generation St. Louis, second to be born there, and knows more about St. Louis history than anyone else I know. And I love to get it from her because she knows the stuff they don't teach you in class, in the classes that I would have taken if I learned any Missouri history. And as you may know, I am obsessed with Missouri history because my own family's from there. And she is a ministerial candidate working towards dual fellowship with the UUA and the Disciples of Christ. We also have Jake Lionfelds. Jake is an organizer from the St. Louis region with the West County Community Action Network, We Can. That's a coalition of people who live and work in West County, St. Louis, and pursue racial justice in policing, schools, and voting laws. And we've been seeing you guys in social media and following. And let's just start with like a little history, Kimberly. How far back can you go? But how would you describe what's going on right now and what the roots of it are?
Okay. What's going on right now is actually a little something new for me. This protest is a little different than what happened in the direct aftermath of Michael Brown being killed in Ferguson, because that had some basis in reality, it seems. We're now in day 20 of the protests in the aftermath of the Stockley verdict. And this is a new animal. And so I don't know how far back in history we would have to go unless it would be to, you know, Pierre Laclede actually landing in St. Louis 252 years ago to figure out why this is a new animal. But this really feels like a new animal. This, it's different and it's been really crazy to watch and see what's going on, not just at the local level, but at the state level, because a lot of this has to do with how the rest of the state sees St. Louis and how St. Louis gets treated when it comes to state action. So it's been, yeah, this is a new breed for me. So I don't know how far back you really want me to go.
What would you say is so new about it? The level of militarism isn't new. Is it the extent of it, or
it's not the level of militarism? It is the fact that it seems like not only did they not learn from the protests in 2014 to 2015, but that we've gone backward. And in a lot of ways, I didn't think St. Louis could go any more backward than it already was. And I found out that I was wrong. we've now hit the point where the police, St. Louis Metropolitan, which is the city, so we can get into city county stuff too, that they have now paid about $3 million worth of overtime to all the police officers in St. Louis City, which is St. Louis Metropolitan. So if you ever see the letters SLMPD, that is St. Louis Metropolitan Police Department, that is the city of St. Louis. So they've already paid $3 million in overtime. And yet they were, I think it's actually still on the ballot for them to get pay raises come November.
Do you think that it's grounded not only in the city and the county and the state, but also in the Department of Justice, the fact that it's now being run by Jeff Sessions as opposed to Eric Holder?
A little bit, but the Ferguson decree had already been signed off on. ED is being monitored by the court. And the judge who is monitoring that is really a kind of take no prisoners kind of judge. She doesn't care about, she really doesn't care who's running the Justice Department. The thing with the where the Justice Department will actually play a role is whether there will actually ever be an investigation into St. Louis Metropolitan. Back in 2014, when the Justice Department said that they were going to investigate Ferguson, a lot of us were saying that they should have done not just Ferguson, but the city as well. And if they could have done the county police, what we call County Brown, that would have been good too. We kind of knew County Brown wasn't going to happen because the county, it's St. Louis County stuff, but there was a real possibility that the Justice Department could have investigated the city at the same time, and they chose not to. And that's probably the bigger issue, that it won't happen with Jeff. We know that it's not going to happen with Jeff Sessions as Attorney General, but maybe at some point down the line, we can get an investigation into St. Louis Metropolitan.
Interesting. Jake, now that Kimberly has told us this city county, I don't even know what to call it yet. So you're from the county. I now know that that means more than I knew it meant when I introduced you. So can you talk about the county a little bit and ground us a little bit in what working with the West County?
Yeah, sure. I also think it might be helpful as a quick catch up for those who aren't familiar with the Stockley case itself. This is actually a case that predates Ferguson. On December 20th of 2011, then St. Louis Metropolitan Police Department officer Jason Stockley and his officer partner had pursued the car of Anthony Lamar Smith after there was a suspected drug transaction. Stockley ended up murdering Smith, and we can kind of go into some of the details of what all went wrong in that particular series of interactions that led to Smith's murder. But, I think one of the reasons there was a lot of frustration building towards in advance of the release of the Stockley verdict decision is that our former circuit attorney in the city sat on this case for 5 years. And so she had the choice whether or not to pursue prosecution, and decided not to do so for 5 years. And then finally, before her term in office expired, she decided to begin prosecution, which invariably meant that the new St. Louis City Circuit Attorney, or Kimberly Gardner, ended up taking over the case. And he was indicted and had a trial. And then this verdict was handed down. But there's been a lot of frustration bubbling, especially in the last year, related to this verdict, precisely because it, by everyone's account, this was, justice delayed. This pursuit of an indictment and having Stockley face justice should have happened many years ago. And it only just happened that we had him brought to trial. And he was prosecuted, and he had a lot of charges levied against him, which was heartening to see. But I also think there was a significant sentiment of, well, he's probably going to be found not guilty on all accounts, just because of white supremacy, frankly, and also the way our case law, which is informed by white supremacy, has been built up in this country. So that sort of sets the stage. And again, we can go into more details about how Stockley particularly interacted the day he murdered Anthony Lamar Smith. But that's why this has been such a
thanks for that
point of tension. Yeah, absolutely.
So now the county. Describe why it is that you're an organizer with a county. That I, you know,
sure.
Here at least counties don't really have organizers in Minnesota. So I'm curious.
Yeah. So if for anyone who doesn't know, back in the 19th century, St. Louis City, which is now its own county, and St. Louis, the wider St. Louis County area, split. And that was a decision that the city sort of instigated. And so, unlike most major metropolitan areas, it is comprised of two counties. And so when we talk about St. Louis County, we're talking about the area surrounding the city, which is its own county as well. But I organize out in St. Louis County. And the reason I do that is because I grew up there.
This is new to me.
Yeah, absolutely.
St. Louis is a county surrounded by another county.
Yes.
Okay. So when you say West County, that's just part of the, I'm just seeing this as like an island in a big, big ocean. So, yeah. Okay. All right. Just making sure I got that right. I've never heard of that. So.
Yeah, absolutely. So they are split and they do have separate governments. And in a lot of ways, culturally, they're very separate as well. And we could talk a little bit more about that if you want. But so I organize in West St. Louis County, which is that surrounding county that surrounds the city of St. Louis, which again is its own county. And the reason I organize out there is because it's a predominantly white space in which I grew up, and racism exists there too. You know, one of the hashtags in Ferguson was Ferguson is everywhere. And that is true when we look at the data that we have for what goes on in our police departments in St. Louis County, what goes on in our schools, and what goes on in a host of other institutions. And so I was on the ground in Ferguson for many months, learning a lot back in 2014 and 2015, until you know, we sort of got the call. I remember distinctly listening to Duray McKesson and others at a panel that was being hosted in the city about the need to organize where you're at. And I grew up, you know, 16, 17 years in the county and work there. I have family there. This is very much my home. And so I and a group of other folks from Emerson Unitarian Universalist Chapel started standing vigil for Black lives in the county. Fast forward 3 years, we now have continued those vigils, but then we also have separate organizing teams focused on pursuing racial justice in a host of areas. But the reason I do it is because it is my home, and it's because we need to challenge white supremacy everywhere.
Amen to that. Okay, so that's a little bit of grounding. So who wants to describe I'm just looking at daily arrests in really unlikely places like the Galleria. That must be West County, right? That's not in the city.
Well, okay. This is where it becomes complicated. Jake is from West St. Louis County, which is all the way out almost towards St. Charles County. And so I wish I had had a map so I could show you how this goes. It is essentially St. Louis County is anything east of the Missouri River before you hit what we call before the city. That's why it's important to understand the city-county split. St. Louis City is an island, truly, as you said. It is an island surrounded by St. Louis County. Jake is in West County. The Galleria is actually in Mid County because it is about a mile and a half from Clayton, which is the county seat. And so in all of this, St. Louis is St. Louis because, you know, we are what we are. And when the split happened in 1876, if I'm remembering the exact year right, the city instigated it because it did not want to be seen as part of a rural-ish county. And so the split happened, and then the 20th century happened, and St. Louis grew, the city grew until about 1950. And at that point, St. Louis was the fourth largest city in the country, and then it started its downward slide. At the same time, when the city is starting its downward slide, the county gets bigger. I don't even think natives understand it particularly well, so I can't say that I understand it particularly well. But that's how it happened. But the Galleria is near county seat. It's a little highbrow, but not as highbrow as some other places in St. Louis County. If it had happened at Plaza Frontenac, that would have been really interesting, but which would have been really highbrow St. Louis County. But yeah, there have been protests at the Galleria. They were doing it at Busch Stadium 3 or Busch 2 and Ballpark Village. And so it was starting to get people in different parts of both the city and the county.
Yeah, and I think I would also say the reason, so again, Stockley killed Anthony Lamar Smith, that's St. Louis Metropolitan Police Department, that's the city. But the reason we've been in the county, the reason we've been even out as far as St. Charles, is because the primary strategy, I should say, of the organizing post not guilty verdict of Stockley has been economic disruption. And this can be contrasted a little bit with Ferguson, in that Ferguson was a lot about, there were some economic disruption elements in there as part of the set of tactics that were employed. And there was other things around relationship building and educating folks and confronting police. And so there are a host of different strategies employed in Ferguson. Fast forward 3 years later, we get this verdict. Now, the primary strategy is, you know, no justice, no profits, right? And that's one of the top chants in the street. And so we're going to the Galleria. We're going to Oktoberfest in St. Charles, which is even wider than the county, if you can believe it, and going to different parts of the St. Louis region outside of just the city, but also including the city, to disrupt economic activity. Because if we're not going to get any justice, then they're not going to get any profits. And that is an evolution, by the way, of the chant, no justice, no peace, which was a primary call in the streets in Ferguson. So we're going to continue to be nonviolent, but we are going to disrupt the economy until they stop killing Black people and until our host of other demands are met as well.
Now, I noticed a highway closing a couple days ago. Is that also related to economic disruption, or is that another group doing another thing? And I noticed an elected official getting arrested and a minister and all kinds of stuff going on. So, Kimberly, you look like you know something about that.
Yeah, they closed Interstate 64. Locals know it as Highway 40 for a few minutes. Today is Thursday, so that was Tuesday night. Bruce Franks, who is a state rep from the St. Louis area, from the city, was arrested, as well as Reverend Starsky Wilson, who is the head of the Deaconess Foundation, but what most people in St. Louis will know him as the co-chair of the Ferguson Commission. And so the visual of the co-chair of the Ferguson Commission being arrested is rather striking. Now, whether most people in St. Louis will see it as rather striking or not is a different story. But yeah, there were 100 people arrested Tuesday night. I don't know, Jake might know how many were arrested last night. I know there were some arrests last night, but I don't know how many. But it was 100 on Tuesday night.
And there have been hundreds of arrests, frankly. And that's a function of a host of police tactics that we can also get into. But the police response to a lot of these actions has been pretty brutal. And I know that that's something that is easy for folks to sort of hear and maybe intellectualize, but just as a couple of examples, on September 17th, which was 2 days after the verdict was released, there was a series of actions that Sunday. And there was one in the evening. And in the evening, people continued to disrupt after sort of there was the official actions had ended. And so there were folks who were continuing to demonstrate and march through the streets. Well, at a certain point, I guess the St. Louis Metropolitan Police Department decided that they were tired of that, tired of allowing people to access their constitutional rights. And so they kettled in a whole bunch of protesters in a particular portion of downtown. And when I say kettle, I mean that they boxed them in with three different lines of police officers in riot gear. And they told everyone to get on the ground and they arrested everyone. Now, that doesn't necessarily sound violent, but we had live streamers on the ground who were filming what was going on. Those live streamers, after they sat down, weren't trying to resist arrest. Nothing about that, right? The St. Louis Metropolitan Police started macing people who were just sitting there on the ground. Again, not trying to resist arrest. And so they're using chemical agents against people who are completely nonviolent. You know, we've had instances of choking and body slamming, instances of, you know, arresting legal observers and journalists, really crude things being told to protesters and demonstrators. And the reason this is happening is because we're challenging them where it hurts in one of the most severe ways, right? We're affecting the economy. And white supremacy is like integral in our economy, right? And so if we're taking away, if we're disrupting the economy, we're disrupting their pocketbooks. We're disrupting what a lot of their power. And, you know, the ACLU has already filed lawsuits. Several individuals have filed lawsuit against some of the tactics that have been employed. It's been pretty brutal out there. And
that word kettling, which wasn't a word I had known until following this, was used also about the highway protest. Apparently people were told to leave where they'd be arrested. And then that kettling thing, they were surrounded, even people who had no intention of staying or being arrested and were trying to follow their orders were then surrounded and arrested.
Exactly. And they're told to disperse. And then they're not giving a means of dispersal, right? So that is, it's a facade. And it is an excuse for them to go ahead and round people up and arrest them.
My own child is in the middle of a court proceeding exactly like that. So I'm very sensitive to that particular thing of leave or you'll be arrested. You're under arrest. You know. So even with hundreds of witnesses to say that, the witnesses are the protesters and the police are believed. And I think, you know, that's part of the media on this, is that despite all the ways that we've seen police lie consistently, you know, with video footage of what liars they are, they're still cited as the authorities in the media, in the mainstream media, in ways that is just pure, as you say, white supremacy. There's no other explanation for why such liars would constantly be lifted up. So protesting, are new people emerging? Are these, you know, is it kind of a loyal band? Is this growing? Is resistant? Are people, I'm sure some people are more afraid and less likely to resist, probably vulnerable people. You know, there are times when I think it should be white people out there getting arrested. I'm just curious about how that's unfolding in terms of, is it the same activists from Ferguson? Is there a new generation coming? Here, at least, there's still so much trauma from the Fourth Precinct that a lot of the leaders in that are stepped back a bit, healing and taking care of themselves, and some other people are emerging. Is that what's happening there? Or I'm curious about the evolution of the activism.
I think it's a bit of both, because the actions in St. Louis have been going on for so long, because there was an action every day for 400 days in the aftermath of Ferguson. So, and there have been periodic actions ever since. there is a loyal base, and which is really good. And then there are, you have the activist base, and then you have the clergy base, because there is a base of clergy in St. Louis that were involved in Ferguson, who were actually involved before Ferguson, but who came to prominence during the events of Ferguson, who have stayed in the fray and who stayed in the mix and who brought other people in, both activists and people who wouldn't consider themselves activists. So it's a really interesting thing. And what happened at the 4th Precinct in Minneapolis was such a different animal than what, in a lot of ways, than what's been happening in St. Louis, that I could see why those activists would step back. That's a different kind of trauma. That was an immediate kind of trauma. And what's been going on in St. Louis, I always say that I'm really tired of hearing the letters PTSD, because that's not what we're going through in St. Louis. What we're going through in St. Louis is continuing trauma. And at some point, you just get acclimated to continuing trauma. So it's a different thing.
Yeah, 400 days. That is continuing trauma right there. You mentioned the interfaith, and of course, it was in the news about the synagogue and the UU congregation being a place of respite at one point in the demonstrations, in ways, again, when you say this is new, in ways I'd never encountered before. Was either one of you close to people involved with that you could describe it a little more?
First Church is my home church in St. Louis. So I know Gary James, who is the interim minister, Susan Talvey, who is the rabbi at Central Reform, has been involved in justice work in St. Louis forever, it seems. It's just about been forever. And so CRC, which is Central Reform Congregation, the congregation that she leads, is known for being a justice-seeking Reform Jewish congregation in the midst of the city. They are the only Reform Jewish congregation in the city. So she's really well known. And so she had already said that if something happened the night that people ended up having to take refuge at CRC, that CRC was going to be open no matter what. And it so happened that it was a Friday night, and they had just finished services at CRC when protesters started coming in, because in another instance of kettling, the St. Louis Metropolitan kettled them within a couple of blocks, and people got to both CRC and First. They're right across the street from each other. So got to them as quick as they could, because especially at the beginning, St. Louis Metropolitan was spraying tear gas. And so the first weekend, that Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and even into that Monday, there was tear gas going, mace was flying around everywhere, pepper spray, all manner of chemical agents were being used, and people were trying to get away. And so CRC and First became places of refuge.
So the protesters joined the worshipers in the synagogue, and it sounded like they really couldn't leave for a while.
They couldn't. It was at least 2 hours that they could not leave. And if even after that time, the police tried to arrest people as they were coming out, and they got a few, but not a whole bunch. So yeah.
Well, and just to add to that point, I'm part of the housing cooperative here in St. Louis, and two of our folks were in there. In the Central Reform Congregation, you know, it was telling that if the goal was really to disperse the protesters, then not allowing them to leave the Central Reform Congregation is incongruent with that goal, right? And so this was actually about intimidation, and it was about, you know, quelling First Amendment rights. This is about trying to arrest people. So then when they finally came to an agreement and they told people to go back to their cars and stuff, then they just like immediately started throwing out tear gas as people were walking away. and it was just, shocking, but not surprising, I think, is the thing I would say. I do want to point out that, you know, if you're looking for, because it can be hard, it's been hard to, like, being on the ground a lot these last 20 days and then seeing the coverage, there's such a disparity. And I think what I would recommend, I was kind of thinking last night, well, if people really wanted to know what was going on, what could they do? I'll give people four resources. I think the Riverfront Times has covered this really well. I think the St. Louis public radio folks have covered this pretty well. And then I think I would point to two sort of less conventional, less traditional forms of information. One is the Arch City Defenders Facebook page. So Arch City, it's one word, and then Defenders. And people are probably very familiar with them, but they will often, they've shared some articles and some coverage, but then, like, contextualize it or talked about what's not true. And then finally, there's a live streamer, Revolutionary Z, is as he's known on Twitter, and folks can find his content pretty easily. But those, I think, are four sources of information where if people wanted to get coverage that mirrored more closely what was actually going on the ground, those are some sources that they could check out.
So, you know, I'm hearing two things that I think both deserve time here. One is the immediate, what's going on right now, the ongoing protests and the crackdowns and, you know, the horrific stories that I'm seeing, you know, about how the police are acting, the chants, you know, are whose streets are streets. People have probably seen these things in the news. But Kimberly, you mentioned that this is an ongoing trauma, like a permanent state of trauma that exists there. And so I want people to have this, to have an understanding that this is not the last 5 years in St. Louis that these relationships have been like this. And yes, you could go, you know, you could start 250 years ago in St. Louis history, and we, you know, have an entire course on it, and you'd spend 40 hours talking to us about it. But if you might give us, I don't know, a couple of instances from you know, the last couple of decades or something like that can really help people understand the state of ongoing trauma that you talk about.
I would really appreciate it. State of ongoing trauma. Okay. Actually, I don't have to go back that far.
Great.
Most people, unless you were in St. Louis at the time when Michael Brown was killed, will not remember that roughly a week after Michael Brown was shot, I think it was 10 days after Michael Brown was shot, a young man named Kajimi Powell was shot in North St. Louis City, about 3 miles from where Michael Brown was shot. Kajimi was known to have mental issues. I mean, he was known by the police department as having mental issues. He had never been violent, had never, ever, ever displayed the tendency towards violence. He just had mental issues. There was no question about that. And yet, on that August day, it was a Monday, he went into a local, New Yorkers would know it as a bodega. He went into a local bodega, and nobody really knows for sure whether he stole the can of soda and the candy bar. All we know is that when he left the store, he had a soda and a candy bar and was in one of his phases and was talking to himself and going back and forth the way some people who have particular types of mental illnesses do. And the police got called. Nobody actually knows who called. And they came up, and within a minute of them showing up on the scene, Kajimi was shot 7 times. I think his and Michael Brown's was exactly the same. So I think it was 7 times, and he was dead within minutes. The police officers who were on the scene was barely investigated. It was automatically assumed that it was a justified shooting because of something that Kajimi had in his hand at the time, which if you ever get to see the video, you will see that there's at least 30 feet or so between Kajimi and the police officers at the time he was shot. And so he was no threat to them, and yet he is dead. And say, and so to St. Louis, just this year, St. Louis police have shot and killed more people than any other police department in the country, including the bigger cities like Chicago or New York. And per capita, for the past, I think it's the past 10 years, St. Louis Metropolitan has shot and killed more people than the major metropolitan areas of the country. So when I talk about continuing trauma, it really is continuing trauma.
And we should mention also that the St. Louis City Circuit Attorney has 25 open cases around officer-involved shootings. So we had the Stockley case. There's 25 other cases that are open. And I think that maybe points to that, another piece of data, right, of how prevalent this is and how much lack of even investigating and considering these officer-involved shootings of folks in the St. Louis region. It's pretty astounding.
I think I should, since Jake brought up the circuit attorney, St. Louis City now has a new circuit attorney. She was just elected in April. She has gone before the Board of Aldermen in the city and has said that she firmly believes that it is time to take investigative powers away from the police department and setting them in the circuit attorney's office in cases of officer-involved shootings. Because, and I think I'm actually directly quoting her, the police cannot be trusted to investigate themselves.
We should mention that also this is Circuit Attorney Gardner. She's a Black woman. Jennifer Joyce was a white woman. And so you see how this change in institutional leadership to someone who has lived and understood this for a long time changes the dynamic. And I think I am hopeful in some of her initial moves, and I certainly trust her more than I trusted Jennifer Joyce to pursue justice. It's that part is heartening. And I think it's also a function of, you know, and we can get a little bit more into this, but it, you know, that is one of the most recent positive outcomes of some of these disruptive activities is Circuit Attorney Gardner's request in front of the Board of Aldermen.
Thank you. Thank you for that. And, you know, I think that those of us who are not near St. Louis and who don't have family and friends there don't really have the sense, you know, like Meg and I learned about St. Louis geography this morning. And I knew a little bit about it, but it was instructive just to learn about when we hear St. Louis in the news, like that refers to two things that have a relationship with one another that is fraught with with white supremacy. Let's just put it that way. It's fraught with white supremacy, that relationship. And I think it's important for those of us who are out here to know that, like, okay, we've heard of Michael Brown's death in Ferguson, his murder on the streets of Ferguson, but fewer of us hear about other cases. And it's not, you know, for every Michael Brown, there are 20 other people whose cases don't make the national news. And the people of St. Louis, the Black people of St. Louis especially, are holding all of that grief, that trauma, that anxiety that comes from that. So thank you. Thank you just for a little bit of that history.
So one more question. The court system, like here, Minneapolis is a sanctuary city, but the courts that try everybody and the jails, they're all county, and it's not a sanctuary county by a long shot. So there are all the jails and everything also city versus St. Louis County, or how does that work? And the judges and all of that. I can see it's going to be complicated.
No, it's just, St. Louis is a strange animal in so many ways. Like Jake and I have both said, you have to separate the city from the county. So everything you think of as a county function happens in the city because the city is its own county. So it has its own courts, circuit courts. It has its own, it definitely has its own jail. And that's a totally different issue because the issues around St. Louis city jails is frightening. St. Louis City has its own sheriff. And so there's a whole other level of law enforcement in the city outside of St. Louis City Police.
Isn't St. Louis City more politically progressive than St. Louis County, or no?
It can be. St. Louis City has generally gone Democratic. It's been so long since St. Louis City had a Republican in high office that I think I would have to ask my dad if there's been one in his lifetime. It's been that long that the city has been Democratic. The county is a different beast because there are the conservative parts of St. Louis County. So South County is highly conservative. There are parts of West County, Jake would be able to tell you better than I can, that are highly conservative. And if you went over to St. Charles County, that would be completely conservative.
But you're saying progressive conservative doesn't really make a difference when it comes to white supremacy, policing,
no,
militarism, all of that. And I think that's good for us to know if we fantasize that this is all about Republicans and all about Trump and, you know.
This has been going on much longer in St. Louis than even, okay, not Trump. I mean, going back before Reagan. And so St. Louis has its progressive parts, but for all of its talk, St. Louis is really nothing but an old Southern town.
Yeah, and I think to that point, if you look at the distribution of development incentives in the city of St. Louis, it is disproportionately, those are disproportionately allocated to the wider parts of the city. And so there's structural racism there too. And what should be noted is that our new mayor, Lyda Crewson, she is a Democrat. She's been, she talks a good game on some issues. But she was part of facilitating for the many years she was an alder woman before she became the mayor. She was part of facilitating the disproportionate distribution of development incentives, right? And there's a host of examples of that. But there's structural racism in how we invest in communities in the city of St. Louis, and every single one of our alder persons is a Democrat. So, you know, there's that should be noted as well. And I think, you know, to be clear, I've gotten a lot of pushback, as many other people have, noting that like protest isn't constructive, or why don't you try X or why don't you try Y? And that's always present in some form, but protest is constructive, and we should be pushing that reality onto folks, I think. For example, not only do we have the hopeful signs with the circuit attorney, but also St. Louis City Mayor Lyda Crewson recently came out in favor of strengthening our civilian oversight board of the St. Louis Metropolitan Police Department, right? So it should be noted that before, while she was running in the Democratic primary to be the Democratic nominee for mayor for the city of St. Louis, she was against strengthening that oversight board. But because of these protests, she's come out in favor of it. And talk is one thing, walking is another, and we have to make sure she walks the talk. But protest is constructive. And if we think otherwise, not only are we ignoring history, but we're ignoring very real recent examples. And so we should note that, and we shouldn't try to explain away just that, you know, we often see the among white folks, the quote that rioting is the language of the unheard. Well, actually, we're really organized, and we're really, like, we really know what we're doing. And protest is part of the American tradition, and it is very useful for pushing for transformation in our societies. So I just want to mention that as well, since I know we're running up against the hour.
We are running up against the hour. I want to say protesting is really effective, and also our congregations have a lot of privilege that can be used inside as well as outside. And I want to mention that CLF, along with the Love Resists campaign, are hosting two lawyers, Al and Adam Gerhardstein, who have sued a lot of police departments and work for accountability of policing, specifically in Cincinnati. Al's been doing this for decades, and he's worked with Black leaders to really make this work and have impact. So we're going to be doing a year-long process where we invite people, because you might not be in St. Louis, but trust me, wherever we all are, these white supremacist systems are solidly in place. And as Jake was saying, it's one thing to have a citizens review board. It's another thing to make it work. So to call these webinars is not accurate. This is an organizing process where we want you to get a team together from your city. They will give you tools to use to figure out what's going on and how you can have impact over the year. There will be webinars, but there will also be a lot of support behind the scenes. So if you want to do that where you live, I really encourage you to do it. Jess will post the link where you can learn more and register for it. But I'm really excited, because I think Unitarian Universalists can be in the streets, absolutely. But also, I remember Lena said once when Black Lives UU was here, we're in the streets because that's the only place we have power. Y'all have power in a lot of places. Get in there. And this is getting in there into all kinds of corridors inside. So we need both. We need brave people like Jake organizing. We need clergy. We need all of the above if we're going to be effective here. So I had to put a plug in for that, and I'm really excited about it. It'll start on October 12th, so it's going to come up soon. But getting a team together might take a while, and that's okay, because the webinar is just a webinar. We've all been to webinars. That doesn't mean a thing. It's the organizing and the actual doing it that makes the difference. Last words from either one of you.
St. Louis is everywhere. I think we forget that sometimes. And also, just because you're not hearing it in the news, there is something going on in St. Louis. We're at day 20. I don't see this going away anytime soon. The links Jake put up about the Riverfront Times and St. Louis Public Radio, Jason Rosenbaum, who is from St. Louis Public Radio, has been on this since before Ferguson, but he's doing a spot on thing. But really, St. Louis is everywhere. There's a reason St. Louis is in the middle of the country, and it really is the middle of everywhere.
And I guess I won't even try to follow up with that, because I think it's spot on. I would though be remiss if I didn't mention the St. Louis Legal Fund, which is being used to bail people out of jail, to ensure people have representation once they get arrested, things like that. You know, I can post the link, but we created a short URL, or someone did, I didn't, but it's bit.ly/stlbail. And I can give you guys that link too, but we've raised a lot of money so far, but we've also used a lot of money that money so far. So please, if you can, no amount is too small, and donate so people who are in the streets have representation.
All of these links will be available at the CLF page, as well as embedded if you're watching this on YouTube. Thank you so much to YouTube. Thanks for 400 days and 500 more days and 400 years and all of it. So be strong. Take care of yourselves. See y'all next week.
This has been a podcast of The View, brought to you by the Church of the Larger Fellowship. To find out more about the CLF, visit questformeaning.org.